Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and today that intro is particularly accurate because my guest today is joining us from Moscow itself. He is Matthew Luxmore, an RFERL correspondent who's based in Moscow and has also done a lot of good reporting from beyond the Russian capital as well. Matthew, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
All right. Well, one thing I'd like to do is hear a bit from you, Matthew, about what it's like in Moscow right now. Obviously, different countries and different cities have different rules, guidelines, and cultures and are dealing with the coronavirus pandemic in different ways. And I think it's maybe hard to picture exactly what life is like in one place these days if you live in another. Prague, for instance, where we are, is a very tourism-oriented city, obviously, especially the central parts. But the Czech Republic is now closed to almost all foreigners. Most of the shops, aside from food shops and some others, are closed. And it's mandatory to cover your mouth and nose in public. That includes on the street. Restaurants are open only for takeout, and schools are shut. Many other things are shut. Yesterday morning, Sunday morning, I walked along two main streets downtown at about 10 o'clock, and they were almost completely deserted. A couple of guards, soldiers with guns, and just a handful of other people on what are normally very tourist crowded streets. Matthew, I take it things are a bit different in Moscow, or at least they were last week. What does the city look like now? What kind of measures are in place, and how are people handling it?
So I think in short, we're probably slowly moving in a similar direction. Russia is also closed to foreigners at the moment, although we certainly don't have the same restrictions that citizens of Prague have at the moment. But I'd say a first-time visitor to Moscow would probably see little amiss. Shops are still open, as are restaurants and cafes. People continue to complain about the morning traffic, as they've always done. Even if those who take public transport now find it easier to get a seat, mm-hmm. Because it's simply emptier than it was before. But Moscow has definitely slowed down, which is noticeable to someone who's, anyone who lives here. The COVID-19 caseload here is rising, even if at a slower pace than the hardest hit countries in Europe. And the government has begun to introduce some restrictions. So schools, museums, cinemas and gyms are closed. And people over 65, actually, this morning have been instructed to stay home. So on the streets, many people are wearing masks, even if many more aren't. And many people are probably trying to keep distance from others. That's also to do, I think, the small amount of people on the streets probably has a little bit to do with the weather as well, which is cold, far, far colder than many places in Europe, around 0 degrees now and slipping into minus numbers. So we've not seen yet the wave of stockpiling that's hit many European countries and the U.S., but images have surfaced online of supermarket shelves emptied of toilet paper, canned goods, and buckwheat, which is a traditional go-to staple for Russians when times are tough. I've personally had no problem thus far sourcing food products and other things, but I am yet to find a pharmacy that's still stocking face masks or plastic gloves.
Right.
Now, my gym closed on Saturday. I'm in line with a government order issued that day. And when I visited a sports store yesterday, the large section selling weights and other training equipment was packed with customers. People are simply now looking for a way to continue the exercise routines at home.
Oh, okay, that's all very interesting. Here we have the same problem with finding masks, gloves, respirators. There's nothing. Nothing like that is to be had in the pharmacies as far as I've seen. My local Russian store does have a fine supply of buckwheat and other and other staples, sunflower seeds and such. But it sounds like there are quite significant differences. I'd like to just turn to another aspect of the situation with the coronavirus in Russia, obviously related to the mood and response, but a little bit different. I think another difference between the Czech Republic and Russia is the number of cases. Here there are more than 1,100, while in Russia, and of course, in other European countries, in some, they're much higher, with larger numbers of deaths. Here there's been one death confirmed, I believe, still at this point. Well, Russia, obviously a much larger country. The latest figure today was over 400 for the exact figure. But so obviously lower than so much more countries. But in a story you did last week, you touched on the fact that not everybody in Russia believes those numbers. Matthew, how widespread is the doubt about the official figures, and what do you think is behind those doubts?
So skepticism, I'd say, is definitely rife here in Russia. But that's, I think, true at the best of times in a country where people are generally wary of official explanations. Mm-hmm. The older generation still remembers well the Soviet government's fatal secrecy over the Chernobyl nuclear accident in 1986. And there was also anger more recently over alleged attempts to underplay a spike in radiation in Russia's north last August, in an area where the military was reportedly conducting nuclear missile testing. So this time round, I think several things provide fodder for people's distrust over the government's official COVID-19 caseload, which I think now stands at 434. Mm-hmm. So we've only seen gradual growth in the number of cases here. I think at an average of around 60 more cases each day for the past week. So it's not been exponential growth of the kind witnessed in Europe, and I think is expected in such a highly infectious illness. With the government claiming to have conducted over 133,000 tests for the disease, the detection of fewer than 500 positive cases, I think, strikes many as very surprising. Although, as I understand it, the latest news this morning is that testing criteria, or the way of testing, has been changed. So, okay. Whereas previously the government was sending almost all test results to a lab in Siberia, which I think is the only one considered to have the expertise to conclusively issue a positive diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Now, I think they're working off swabs, and the first positive result will essentially be added to the official caseload. So we may actually see a steep rise in cases over the next few days, if that's indeed the case.
Oh, I see, yes.
But I mean, the government here did take strong measures early in the developing pandemic, for instance, shutting its 4,000-kilometer border with China and also restricting many inbound flights. But generally speaking, I think remains still very lax in screening new arrivals. I, for instance, came into the country a week ago, and there wasn't any, apart from kind of a mobile temperature check, there weren't any questions or any further checks. And, right. And based on anecdotal social media chatter I've seen this morning, other people coming into the country are also not being screened to the same extent, although I can't, confirm that. And also, obviously, life in major cities, as we've already discussed, seems to be mostly forging ahead as before. And I think that's probably more the case for other cities than for Moscow, which has seen the highest number of cases, and in fact, the vast majority of cases in Russia. Mm-hmm. Alongside this testing discrepancy, there's also been a marked rise in pneumonia cases recorded in January, which, according to government figures, is up almost 40% relative to the previous January. And although some experts have suggested this stems from people's greater willingness to get treatment for all illnesses at a time when fear over COVID-19 is high, the figure is obviously only further fueled skepticism.
Right.
There are also economic benefits to underplaying the scale of the spread, of course. I mean, the ruble has already depreciated by 30%, and the government is insisting people have no reason to panic. Putin, President Vladimir Putin and Prime Minister Mishustin have made those urges recently. And finally, there's clear political gain, I think, for the Kremlin from any success in preventing the virus's spread in Russia. So Putin is one step away from securing constitutional changes to run again for election 2024, and potentially paving the way for him to rule until 2026 if he seeks a fifth six-year term in 2030. Right. And for that to happen, Russia's planning to hold a national vote, which is expected to approve those constitutional changes. And that national vote was meant to cement those changes. It was meant to be slated for April 22nd. Now, postponing it would mean postponing that final step, which would obviously be a headache for the Kremlin. Although unconfirmed reports this morning suggest that the Kremlin will indeed put off the vote, most likely until June. And by that point, we'll hopefully, though perhaps naively, be past the worst.
Right.
So we'll have to see how that pans out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that'll be interesting to see whether it is postponed. I mean, obviously, you know, from a political point of view and also kind of a humanitarian point of view, I guess the Kremlin has a tough decision because, you know, on the one hand, you'd think that they would want to get it over with because you can't predict the future. And, you know, it's unclear. I mean, in New York, for instance, the mayor is saying April's going to be worse than March and May may be worse than April. You know, so
yeah.
I guess the question in the Kremlin's mind will be, well, if we put it off, you know, is that going to end up, you know, being the wrong decision? So, yeah, as you say, there are these reports this morning citing people close to Putin's administration that it will be postponed possibly until June. So we'll have to we'll have to see about that. All right, Matthew. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say they may perhaps explore some ways of, you know, holding the vote electronically or for people to, you know, make their voices heard from home, although I think that's probably unlikely. But again, we'll have to see.
I know. I mean, I read something about that. I think the opposition certainly believes that there are great, you know, serious problems or doubts about the legitimacy of if there's a lot of voting from home, and that's a way that in the past, I think, you know, has been at least claimed to have been used, you know, to increase the results for the ruling party, for instance. So that might be another sort of calculation. You know, and whether it's worth it to try to go ahead with that in a vote that already may be, you know, whose legitimacy or whose the delivery of a mandate is kind of, you know, clouded by the coronavirus problem. Okay,
yeah.
Well, Matthew, thanks very much. Great insights, and it's great to hear, interesting to hear what's happening there. And so obviously you'll be keeping an eye on that, and so will we. All right, I think it's time to wrap it up for today. Matthew, thanks a lot for joining me.
Great. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Okay, that's it for today, and I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for The Week in Russia, my newsletter about some of the biggest developments and what they might mean going forward. Thanks for listening.